now it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, tasked to protect Senator Padme Amidala during a political mission to Alderaan, Padawan Ahsoka Tano is plagued by reoccurring visions of the recently deceased bounty hunter Aurra Sing. There'll be Yoda wanting to see Ahsoka's wet dreams, girl bonding, and because it's in the title of the episode, assassins! We're talking about assassins this week! How you doing in the 5 minutes, Chris?
Good. Yeah, they're not taking a lot of time writing these titles the last few weeks. Corruption, yeah. The Academy, Assassin.
Yeah, I mean, they have some good ones, like Heroes on Both Sides. That's a really good title. But this one, not so much. This should be like Mama Padme takes care of her daughter, Space Daughter. That would have been a good title, and I would have accepted that.
Space Daughter.
It's from Rebels. Kanan and Hera are space mom and dad. Ezra, Zeb, and Sabine are space kids. And Chopper is the space dog. Space family. They're space family.
Space Family Robinson, which was actually, I think, a real cartoon.
Hera and Kanan are the best space mom and dad ever. I love them. Space mom and dad. Anyway. Listeners, we just had a very rousing conversation before this.
Yep.
We're talking about Chris's new show, and I just have to say, when Eden Beat It comes out, you guys just gotta listen to it. If you like the classiness of our show, I'm so excited to hear the classiness
of... Oh, we're taking classiness to a new level, let me tell you.
I'm so excited, so...
Not saying if it's a higher level or a lower level, but it's a new level.
It's a level.
It's a level, for sure.
You can climb up on it, and you can stand. It's a level. That's why I was so giggly when I was in the opening, because we were just talking about it. I was thinking about it, so I'm very excited. All right, though. Assassins?
I'm ready. For the assassin.
Dave Filoni talked fucking forever in this. I don't know how he crammed in almost an entire page worth of writing in about 3 minutes. So... He just talked.
He's usually a talker.
Usually, like, when they do the episode featurettes, they showed, like, a little clips in between. No, right. From the opening second to the closing second, he talked for 3 minutes straight. Took me, like, over half an hour to transcribe the freaking episode featurette. And I was just like, Dave, shut up! Dave, shut it! Stop it, Dave. All right, so Assassin. Assassin is the 51st episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars and aired on October 22nd, 2010. It was written by George Lucas's daughter, Katie Lucas, with supervising writer Drew Z. Greenberg and Kyle Dunlevy. This is why I don't drink when I do podcasting. And directed by Kyle Dunlevy. Some extra episode information. This episode has the return of several characters from earlier seasons, including Jacosta Nu, Zero the Hutt, and Aurra Sing, who did not actually die in the season 2 finale, so yay!
Although they sort of say she dies in the opening, like, you know, plunges to her death or something like that. They don't even say, like, her apparent death or something. It's weird.
Yeah. So, I think it was one of those things that, like, Ahsoka assumed she was dead. So
right. They,
like,
were, they, were, they were framing it in what we saw in the episode, but doesn't make sense when she shows up in the next scene, you know?
Yeah. It could be something like, maybe she's a Force ghost.
Yeah. So,
I don't know. In the EU, Aurra was trained, was a Padawan for a while before she walked away. So in the EU, she's at least Force sensitive. So maybe she was a Force ghost, and then we found out she's not. But that's EU. So anyway, here we go. The very, very, very long episode featurette. In the episode featurette, Dave Filoni said, "In the episode Assassin, one of the interesting things we got to do is go to Alderaan. This is pretty amazing. I know we saw it in Revenge of the Sith, and that was very eye-opening. It had all these alpine mountains and these futuristic castles set up there. Growing up, I always thought Alderaan was more of these grasslands that Ralph McQuarrie had originally painted for development in the original Star Wars. And then at this point in the featurette, they show a lot of Ralph McQuarrie concept art of Alderaan being grassy. I actually highly suggest watching this featurette because there's a lot of really cool Ralph McQuarrie art in it. So please
check it
out. Yeah, it's pretty cool. When working with George, he wanted to see Bail go to the mountain regions, to the castle that we saw him in Revenge of the Sith. So we dug up all these old concept artworks that George had done for Revenge of the Sith and see how all that stuff works. And here they show more concept art. Let's look at all the Ralph's old data of Alderaan. So we're taking something Alderaan, which was in the original Star Wars, which was just this map painting of a planet that got blown up, and now we're actually going to go there. That's all really exciting, but we want to make sure we get it right. We need to make sure we connect all the different Lucas divisions that have ever done anything with Alderaan and see how for this series for George to make it look like he wants it to. Even composer Kevin Kiner got in the action, and he had Leia's theme, a very reminiscent note of Leia's theme, as Padme is landing on the platform on Alderaan. It's always a great moment when Kevin can sneak those themes in, because it really ties together the whole Star Wars experience. One of my favorite sets on Alderaan is probably the big conference hall where we have a wonderful painting done in the background. It just gives you a set of history, a sense of culture for Alderaan. It's just really wonderfully done. I just love those type of details in those sets. We use some influence on the insides of the blockade runner from Revenge of the Sith. We use some influences from the interior for more futuristic themes for the interior hallways. Then there's a wonderful scene shot on the balcony that's overlooking a vast landscape of mountains that almost reminded me of Sound of Music at that point, which is a nice and fortunate thing if you've seen that movie. Oh, Dave. And I just wanted to add why I would love for you guys to actually go to StarWars.com, type in Assassin, and pull up the episode featurette, because some of the grasslands art that they showed in the featurette and this art of these communication-looking towers outside of a city looks just like Lothal in Rebels. Like, the communication tower looks like the one that Ezra started in the beginning of the series. The grassland one looks like the little parts where they were hiding out in.
I don't think that's any mistake. I mean, when they were making Rebels, they were definitely like, we're going to the Ralph McQuarrie roots for the visual, you know, basis of this show. So, you know, they were looking at those pictures.
Yeah. Like, there's that one of the communication towers, and I'm like, Ezra's living in that. It looks just like Lothal in several of those. So it was really, really cool to see that concept art in the episode featurette, because I actually like wrote Pablo Hidalgo. I was like, what is this? Is this Rebels? He never got back to me, but still. Like, it's
Pablo,
really cool.
Pablo, come on.
Come on, Pablo. No, he's probably busy, man.
Whatever.
He's, like, running all of Lucas Films or whatever.
Oh, whatever.
Actually, he's really open with the fans, so the fact that he's answered a couple of my questions before, I'm okay with that. So, all right. You know who's also okay with being with people named Pablos?
Oh.
Actually, I really like this one.
Pablo for president.
Not currently. Sorry, now I'm chewing, so you're just gonna have to vamp. I mistakenly stuck a candy bar in my mouth.
Oh, mistakenly, huh?
Oh yeah.
You just tripped and the candy bar fell into your mouth.
Oh yeah, it was so good.
Jeez, you're gonna be like a sugar coma by the time we get to the end and we get to the Kit Kat tasting.
I'll be fine.
You have type 2 diabetes.
I grabbed some tiny candy bars when I was between our breaks, so.
You're going to be like Dr. Bill Robinson and have to drink Diet Mountain Dew from now on. All right.
So you know who also likes to trip and find things in his mouth?
Yoda doesn't know if Yoda likes that or not.
All right, so. And this is your space platitude for the week. I actually really like this one a lot.
The future has many paths. Choose wisely. In bed?
Ah! Maybe Yoda should Yoda does like it then. Maybe he did not choose wisely.
Yoda's chosen some unwise paths. Paths that are better one-way direction if you get Yoda's drift.
The drift of Yoda gets. Yes, Yoda does get it, don't you?
Yoda, Tokyo Drift.
Just all like Vin Diesel roll down the window and he's like, hey, buddy! And like Yoda rolls down his window and he's just like, yeah! Alright, so I have to warn you, I did not get a chance to read over these notes, so who knows how
so
much
we don't know. Oh, jeez. Well, we saw what happened last episode, so good luck.
Hey, I had actually proofread those.
Oh.
So let's see. Alright, so Act 1. Back in Season 2, Aurra Sing apparently died when the Slave 1 crashed with her on it. Just wanted to remind you. Anyway, back on Coruscant, the Jedi Council are like, Ahsoka, we thought you breaking the rules and overthrowing a corrupt government was pretty bitchin' last week. Good job. Now there's more pressing shit going down. So Anakin, you're going to go have an exciting battle for this on this one planet. And Ahsoka, you need to stay here and write a 5-paragraph essay on Mandalore. And Ahsoka is just like, ugh. Heading to the ship, Ahsoka asks Anakin if she doesn't go with him to battle, then who will watch Anakin's back for him? Rex, Anakin answers. I have Rex. Now go run along and study while your two dads go destroy the universe. Ahsoka wants to take a nap, and she takes a nap. And then she has a forced vision of Aurra Sing vowing to that some woman will die. But Ahsoka snaps herself awake. She goes to Yoda and asks him more about her dreams. Yoda is like,
tell me more about you in bed.
And Ahsoka is like, no, I'm having dreams. And Yoda is like,
wet dreams, you say?
And Ahsoka's like, can we get back to the plot now? Oh. She tells him that she doesn't believe that Aurra Sing is actually dead and is plotting to kill somebody. Yoda tells her that her force powers are warning them. He says to go meditate and figure out what the dreams mean. Ahsoka falls asleep in the library and she sees a much clearer vision. Aurra Sing is going to try and kill Padme. She goes to Padme to warn her about the assassin, and Padme heeds her warning by asking Captain Typho for more security. But Padme is going to be leaving for Alderaan in the morning for a conference about refugees in the Clone Wars. The refugees are so much more important than the threat on her life. Ahsoka is disheartened and goes back to her room to meditate. She then sees a very clear vision of Aurra shooting Padme. So Ahsoka goes back to Padme and asks her to come along with her on the meeting. Padme accepts the extra security and looks forward to hanging out with her gal pal.
Man, everybody loves having dreams about Padme getting wasted.
I know, right?
I really liked the way they edited the edit into, it was kind of a smash edit, into her first dream slash vision. It almost, because she was sort of running back to her room or whatever. And then all of a sudden, it was very much like in episode 3 where Anakin was having his visions and you had that sort of like down the toilet bowl first to go into it. And it almost looked like it happened to her while she was running and then she wakes up from it. It was just a nice little confusing, it was a confusing edit, but I think it was done in service to Ahsoka's confusion, you know, the confusion of being awake and then asleep and having stuff happen when you're asleep that feels like it's something that happened when you were awake.
Yeah.
And since it was, I don't know if I'm explaining this well, but like just visually, since it was a vision with that weird effect on it, showing her go to sleep and then have that happen, you would have known exactly what was going on. But having her running and then having that and then cutting back to her waking up, it gives you that it has you along with her feeling of disorientation of like, you know, what did I just see? You know, it felt so real, that sort of thing. So I thought that was really well done. I thought that was a really nice little bit of direction and editing.
My favorite one is like the kind of like false awakening where she like opens her eyes and she rolls over and there's Aurra and then she wakes up again. I like that one the best because it's kind of like this kind of like, you don't know quite, like, when does Ahsoka really kind of wake up sort of thing, so.
Yeah, they ripped that off from an American Werewolf in London.
Yeah. So that, I do think there's one too many vision scenes in this early one, because there's a couple times where Ahsoka walks to her room, has a vision, goes to Yoda, walks back to her room, has a vision, goes to Padme, walks back to her room, has another vision, and then goes back to Padme.
Yeah.
I think there's just like one too many.
I like that they had a lot of them. I think it was sort of pushing the, like, it made it seem like that it was, there was an inevitability to what Aura Singh was doing. So that, like, since you know Padme's not going to die, since this is all before episode 3, that was like the best, that seemed to give it the most sense of tension to it, you know?
Yeah. That's a good point. Maybe like the whole tension is like, how will they get out of this since Padme won't die?
Right. It made it seem, you know, she was having visions of something that happened. So it wasn't visions of her saving Padme's life. It was visions of Padme getting killed. So, mm-hmm. you know, that adds, and this is also post episode 3. So people have seen episode 3, and like Anakin's vision of harm coming to Padme and his mother, he wasn't able to avert either of those. So
That's a really good point, but Ahsoka averted hers.
Right, yes.
Ahsoka's the best.
She's a little nicer than Anakin, you know what I mean? She might bend the rules, but she doesn't have the dark streak that Anakin has.
Yeah.
But that's all the notes I had for that first part. I like how Alderaan looks. It's like we're just seeing this specific part of Alderaan, and it's like he said, for me it didn't really feel Alderaan-y till they went out on the balcony in this, but you know, it was like, okay, this is it wasn't what I would picture Alderaan to look like, but I figured it seemed like they were sort of like where the government was like a little floating area with mountains all around it, so it was sort of a protected area, you know, and the rest of the planet. I always pictured big oceans and lakes, you know, and like you said, green grasslands type of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely like all the different things they did for that kind of design. It was very Sound of Music-y. Like, the moment Dave said it, I was like, ah, oh, Sound of Music. Ahsoka is 16, going on 17. Anyway, so for me, for Act 1, I just love the moment when Padme hugs Ahsoka. Oh,
that's a big old hug, too.
I know, that was like a face-squishing, like, nuzzle hug.
It wasn't a diplomatic hug, that was a, like, hey, really, truly glad to see you hug.
Yeah, really, and, like, that's why, like, I kind of like, you know, Ahsoka's space mommy to Ahsoka. And, like, it's really super sweet because Jedis probably don't get a lot of hugs growing up anyway, so it was really nice. They had a hug. And
Yoda gives Jedi's hugs.
No, go back to your corner. You're done for the week. Go. You're done for the week. Go away. I just like shoved like my foot across my desk like I was actually even though there's nothing here. This episode is another reason why I just like love Padme so much as a character. I mean, she knows that there's a threat on her life, but she's still going to go out there and do her job regardless, and that's just really brave of her. It's kind of like when the news reporters go out to, like, war zones to report on it. Like, they're putting their lives out there, and they don't have to, but they're doing it so we can get, like, information and news to try and help people.
It's like, dude, why are you going out there? The bullets are flying. It's like, yeah, don't remind me. But yeah,
I know. So, yeah. And then my other two notes is, this is kind of like a two-parter. These kind of go together. So first, I like that we're seeing Ahsoka's first real test with Force premonitions. While the last few Ahsoka episodes haven't been the best plot-wise, they've been really good this entire season so far about showing how Ahsoka is developing.
Yeah.
We saw her struggle with the Jedi mind trick in the Rio Chuchi episode, and she got to lead up her first non-battle as a Jedi on an investigation on Mandalore last week. So now we're getting to see her try and figure out Force premonitions. So this is really good slow character development so far for her this season, and that's something that they're doing really well. If they're doing anything well this season, developing Ahsoka is a really good thing that they're doing.
They're definitely doing that.
Yeah. But then, here's my follow-up note for that. I think Clone Wars did a much better job showing a Padawan's development with Ahsoka than what they did for Ezra and Rebels. This is season 3 of Clone Wars, and we're in season 3 of Rebels. And in season 3 of Clone Wars, Ahsoka isn't all-powerful or anything like that, and she's still struggling. She's massively struggling, and we've seen her actually fail a couple times this season already. In season 3 of Rebels, it comes off to me as a viewer that Ezra has most things down about the Jedi. Like, he's good with the Force, he's good with jumping, he's good with everything, he's got it. He has some trouble, like, talking with animals sometime, and he struggles with the dark side. But he's definitely not struggling as much as Ahsoka was struggling.
Yeah.
So
I think what we're seeing in the new, in the Force Awakens era of quote-unquote Jedi, except for Kanan, you know, because he's, you know, from the, you know, from, even though it was at a young age, Jedi training. I think Jedi training was probably methodical and meticulous and baby steps on everything. You know, they probably had a whole to work you through it and to teach you things. Since they had you as a kid, it was something, you know, they were teaching it like holistically over your whole Jedi career. So they knew that like your development would happen at a certain rate. In the Force Awakens era with Ezra and with Rey to a even more lesser extent, because she hasn't even had access to like a Jedi master or anybody to give her any training, you're getting this just sort of like raw, like Ezra has Kanan, but Kanan still can't really teach him like he learned in the Jedi Academy. He has to sort of, it's sort of
it's
like
more a, life and death.
It's like a cliff. It's a Cliff Notes life practical version of, you know, of being a Jedi, you know, it's like, we're, you know, get as much of the general stuff in, and so it's, and which is sort of what Luke had, so maybe that's how that developed into Force Awakens era, like, Luke Skywalker's teaching style is only informed by his short time with Yoda, you know?
Yeah, and even shorter time with Obi-Wan.
And a super short time, you know, just basically a ride on a spaceship from one point to another with Obi-Wan. That's all the other...
And some Force ghosts.
yeah. But, so, it's more of a sort of... It's almost sort of like a... Maybe, like, you know, they're almost like a rogue homeschooled Jedis, you know?
Yeah.
So, and maybe the meticulous training of the original Jedis was so you don't get like Ezra or Rey. I think with Ezra and Rey, you're gonna see their like fast development in the Force being a downfall. You know, yeah. Like going too fast.
Maybe that was the downfall of Kylo because he was Luke's apprentice.
Right. And you're developing too many powers. It's like a society where their technology is going ahead of the societal development or something. You know.
Yeah.
So you're getting these Jedi who, so you're, you know, I mean, there were big drawbacks of that sort of, that Jedi style, as we saw in the prequels, but at the same time, there was also the advantage that you didn't make some little kid that all of a sudden had the powers of Darth Vader, but had the, you know, personality of a 6-year-old kid, which would be really dangerous, you know?
Do you remember my white whale from Gliansom, and there was a yes. child on Gliansom that they lost? My white whale. Maybe that's what happened to him.
Oh.
Or her. I mean, I guess you're right. I guess, like, that, because that does make sense. Like, you know, it's more of a life and death situation for Ezra and Rey to, like, learn these, like, skills really fast, especially for Ezra because they're fighting a war. I guess for me, though, the way it comes off writing-wise, it makes Ezra come off like a special snowflake. And, like, that's how he quite often reads to me, is that, like, Ezra is
well,
very...
Well, I mean, he kind of is. Luke Skywalker is a special snowflake, too. I mean, yeah. Ezra's a special snowflake where he's, like, yeah, developing his powers a lot faster than Luke.
And there's not other Padawans to compare him with, either.
Right.
Like, we can compare Ahsoka to Barriss or Ahsoka to the dork... the terrible Mon Calamari Padawan that got killed in season 1. So, like, we do have, like, other Padawans to compare Ahsoka to. We don't have other Padawans or Jedi to compare Ezra to except for Kanan.
For Kanan, yeah.
And Ahsoka. And, well, older Ahsoka.
Briefly.
I mean, that's a really good point. I guess the writing doesn't jive as well with me in Rebels when it comes to Ezra because he just... I think Ahsoka comes off that she appreciates it much more than he does, while Ezra just pulls Batman out and he's just like, my parents are dead! I think Ahsoka's writing is better and more refined, where Ezra is just he's like the kids on Mandalore last week. He's an annoying little shaver that is sometimes I love him, but sometimes I just want to hit him.
I'm waiting on my judgment of Ezra, because from what I've been seeing of the Disney stuff, they have plans for everything. They planned a lot of this out. They're making some of it up as they go along, but they have like plans of where people are going and stuff. So, you know, like another two or three seasons into Clone Wars, maybe a lot of the aspects of Ezra right now will make more sense where he's when he gets where he's going. We'll see. So I'm waiting to see where he's going, to see if it jibes up with his character so far.
And to be like truly unbiased and really fair, Ahsoka annoyed a lot of people in season one.
She annoyed me a little bit through the first movie. When I first met her character, I was like, oh, jeez, come on, I don't want a kitty character. But, you know, but then, like, midway through the movie, I was like, oh, okay, she's fine, you know. Okay, she's not going to be annoying. And then after that, I started actually enjoying the character.
Yeah, so, I mean, and I think, like, I've read accounts of people just being like, I really hated Ahsoka for, like, a character or two, and then she really grew on me. So, I mean, I have to be very fair that Ahsoka is a little bit of annoying in the beginning. So, just to be equally as fair to her as I am to Ezra. So, I hope we get a different Ezra. And if we get six seasons of Rebels, just like we got six seasons of Clone Wars, I hope we get that. Because Ezra's definitely been better this season. Season three, I like him a little bit. Actually, now that I actually thought about the season, there's been several times I just want to shove Ezra into a dark hole. Just be like, go away. Give all the episodes to Zeb and Satine. I don't care anymore. But no, he's... Actually, I liked him better at the end of season two, and then he kind of, like, regressed in the beginning of season three. Anyway, I can't wait till we talk Rebels. That's going to be fun.
Yeah. Well, it is going to be fun because by the time we start talking Rebels, we'll have more of it in context, too. So by the time we start talking about Rebels... Like, our opinions on the characters as we're talking about them right now might be completely different as we go to when we do our review of Rebels Episode 1, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know, I guess it's easy to not compare Kanan to Anakin as masters, because they're clearly different. Clearly very different characters.
Kanan is, like, actually somewhere between Anakin and Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
But
with a little Han Solo thrown in, too, you know?
He reminds me of Quinlan Voss, actually. He's very much like Quinlan Voss in my eyes. But for me, like, Ahsoka and Ezra are very much walking similar paths, especially since they're the Padawans. They're both going through training. They're both learning how to use their abilities. So we can't really compare Anakin and Kanan, but we can definitely compare Ezra and Ahsoka writing-wise. And sure. So I think that's... It's much more easy for me to criticize that opposed to criticizing the other two. I mean, one turns into Vader. Come on.
Yeah.
One turns into Vader, the other one's the head of a rebellion, so we can't really compare that. So, plus Anakin has about 15 years on Kanan, so. Old man Vader. Well, that's all I had for Act 1. You ready?
I'm ready for Act 2.
All right, especially since it's like 10 p.m. Atu! In a lovely conversation that's one of my personal favorites of Star Wars, Padme notices that Ahsoka's heart isn't into playing their board game that night. Ahsoka admits that she's scared about trying to understand her abilities. Anakin isn't there to guide her at the moment, and she doesn't really know what to do. Padme tells her that when she was queen, she had a lot of the same fears as Ahsoka. Sure, she had advisors like Ahsoka has Anakin, but sometimes you just gotta make choices on your own, which can be scary. And Padme tells Ahsoka that in time, the Padawan will learn to trust herself and become Fulcrum and help lead a rebellion one day, and Ahsoka thinks that's pretty darn cool. That night, Ahsoka has another dream and freaks out. She charges into Padme's room with a lightsaber blazing and stands over Padme in protection, claiming the assassin is on the ship. It's a false alarm, though, and Ahsoka is super upset that she messed up again. Arriving on Alderaan, Padme meets with her future baby daddy, Bail Organa, and Senate Mom, Mon Mothma, is there too. Ahsoka sits outside of Padme's chamber and meditates. She sees a vision again and consults with Padme. First thing, though, Ahsoka apologizes for her mistakes on the matter, which is pretty big for her. She tells Typho that she even saw the location of the attack in her vision. Captain Typho takes Padme and Ahsoka to the meeting room for that night, and Ahsoka confirms that it's the place that the attack will happen. Padme states that they still have a fighting chance to stop Aurra Sing. Later on the balcony, Padme is enjoying the view, and Ahsoka is like, "Mom, get back inside here before you catch a cold or you get shot." And Padme flat out says, "I refuse to live my life in fear, even though there's danger out there, and that is no way to live." At the meeting that afternoon, one of the guards is silently killed in the vents. Padme stands to give her speech to the summit about the events of Episode 1 when Qui-Gon has lost his life and how 100 Jedi has already lost their lives in the process, and now there's a bajillion refugees going on in the Clone Wars. Aurra Sing sets up shop in the vent, and Ahsoka suddenly senses her. She flees up to the vents, and at the last moment, Force pushes Aurra to the side. And Aurra gets the shot off. Aurra's shot goes wide and strikes Padme in the shoulder instead of the head. Ahsoka chases Aurra Sing, but the assassin gets away while Bail screams for a medical droid to come help save his baby mama.
Yeah, this is where it starts breaking down for me a little bit.
Really? This is where it picks up for me.
Action-wise, it picks up, but plot hole-wise, I just started tearing this apart by, you know... And I wasn't thinking, like, I would tear this apart. I was, like, I was caught up in it, so I was thinking, if I was having these visions, and I was a trained Jedi-style tactical military person, how would I handle this situation? And once she got into that room and said, this is the room where it happens, and from seeing her visions myself, you could see what Aurra Sing was doing. She was in the vents, directly across, you know, up and across from Padme, opposite her, and would shoot down from the vents. So you know where the shot's coming from, you know?
I think it goes back to what Yoda was saying, though.
There's many different possibilities.
Yeah, like, you know, she could pop out if they put all their guards there, or it could see, like, oh, the guards are over there.
Put guards everywhere. I would have the guards in the vents and then in the other places, too. And then when the danger starts happening, Ahsoka runs through the hallways and then up into the vents and through the vents to go avert it. When she's a Jedi, she could just sit in the front row. And I mean, really, like, your first duty in the chain of duties there as a Jedi protector of Padme is to make sure nobody kills her. So yeah. the most practical thing for you to do is sit somewhere where you can hop up in front of her when the shot's taken, whip out your lightsaber and deflect it, and then and then go after Aurra Sing or whatever, or hope there's guards ready to go after or whatever. But either way, your goal is achieved. Your goal isn't to catch Aurra Sing; it's to make sure Padme stays alive. So she sort of, by running up there, she leaves her open, you know, at that point. So I thought that was, I would have had, like, basically the Alderaanian CIA there going, okay, here's all the potential sniper points. These are the only places where someone could shoot from here. We got this door. We've got these vents up here. And I would have those places, like... locked up with, like, why not have, you know, all sorts of crazy space stuff, like, so if you're, you know, put a sensor on your guard, so if they go unconscious, all of a sudden, you know, get knockout gas gets sprayed and, you know, something like that, you know.
Yeah.
Heightened security of not just guys standing around facing forward and looking out the vents, you know. They would have had... Our own CIA would have had people looking out the vents and then people behind them walking, looking up at the ceiling and, like, we're talking on their headsets and, you know, their heads swiveling like marmosets in the desert. Are those marmosets? Meerkats. Sorry. Marmosets are, like, in the Pacific Northwest. getting
that's
my...
okay. They don't have squirrels.
I think they're both marsupials, though. I think they're both pouchers.
But, that's okay. They don't have squirrels in Russia.
Yeah, my the security clearance part of my brain was getting tweaked in this part. I was just like, okay, what, you know. But, you know, I let go all of it for the sake of the story action. But, yeah, that's
you know, I put the note in X3, but it just is so much better to say it now. You know, we've talked about it before, how often Jedis are, like, crawling through vents. Ahsoka doesn't crawl through any vents in this episode, which is where Aurra Sing is hiding and waiting.
And she's had she had plenty of opportunity to crawl through vents. Yeah, yeah, space movies are just, vents are a great, they're a cheap set.
Yeah. And I think, like, a lot of it is also, like, I think I also misspoke. Like, Aura's in a balcony hallway that has those, like, slated windows. That's actually where she is. She's in a balcony hallway. It just looks like a vent, but it's not.
Right, right.
So, but, like, she clearly, in Act 3, crawls out of a vent and is crawling through vents. And this is, like, the one episode where we don't have Jedis, like, inside vents. But they'll be in vents in every other episode of Clone Wars.
Put some security cameras in those vents.
I know, right? You'd find things faster. You would think after the first time a Jedi, like, crawls through a vent and, like, pops out of it, like, the Separatists would be like, hey, we should put cameras in our vents.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing is, vents are always treated like this this genius thing that someone's like, how can we get to point A, point B without anybody says, we'll use the vents. And it's just,
you know,
like,
that's why Ant-Man is so good. It's a heist movie, and they had security in the vents.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's why Ant-Man is so good. They thought about that shit.
It makes sense, yeah. So, yeah, that's all I really had is my little... Oh, no, I did note that they made a point to show some Leia hair to show you that was a Alderaan thing.
Yeah, and the Kevin Kiner music when they land is really pretty with Leia's theme.
Is.
That's a really nice moment. There was another theme earlier in Act 1, and I forgot to write it down, but it was very reminiscent of, like, season of original trilogy Star Wars, too, so.
I like that they didn't just, like, hint at it or give you a little whiff of it. They gave you a nice, you know, nice little playing of her theme. It was subtle because it's a subtle theme, but it was really nice. It was really well done, and it was just like, oh, yeah, we're on Alderaan, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right, so this is the reason why this episode does not fall apart for me. It's because of the character stuff. Mm. I have three big notes in this. So here we go. Ready? Padme's talk with Ahsoka about having insecurities and learning to trust your decisions is an incredibly well-done moment, and it's one of my favorite moments in Clone Wars, period, the end. It's very common in television to pit women against each other, whether it's for, like, a man or a competition or a job. And that's a very popular trope in television to do, especially around the time that Clone Wars was airing in 2010. That was, like, everywhere. Just look at Glee. Luckily, since then, there's been a lot of focus in television shows where women support each other, they help each other, they hold each other up, and they do stuff like that. So that's what this conversation is with Padme and Ahsoka. This is two women that are supporting each other in this moment. It's a very nice private moment for them. Padme is playing the role of Anakin in this moment, but she's being a more maternal or sisterly Anakin with Ahsoka, and which is really cool because she is Anakin's wife. So I'm sure he tells her about Ahsoka all the time and talks to her about, like, his Padawan and stuff. So she probably knows more about Ahsoka than Ahsoka knows. Thinks that she knows. So that's very nice that she's playing that Anakin role. And she really just wants Ahsoka's best interests because that's also what's best for her husband. If Ahsoka's doing well, that means she has someone looking out for her husband. And I would even venture to say that she considers Ahsoka as part of her, like, little weird family with Anakin.
Right. Well, so, she probably notices that Anakin really cares about and identifies with Ahsoka, so she does by extension, you know?
Yeah, and so it's really interesting, and I really like seeing Padme kind of taking more of a maternal Anakin role for Ahsoka. That's really, I really like that they included that moment.
That's probably the first time anybody's spoken the words maternal Anakin role.
Maternal
those
Anakin.
Those three words probably have not ever been put together before. So congratulations.
Well, yeah. Thank you. This is also a really great teaching moment for me because, you know, I have 9 nieces and nephews and I love them all. And but a lot of times, like, I have boys and girls, and a lot of times I sometimes, oh my gosh, I'm glad my sisters don't listen to my podcast because they are about to be very mad at me. Sometimes I disagree when they're like, girls need to be girly and boys need to walk it off. And that's not very always the best thing for children. This is a very great teaching moment for young viewers, and part of the reason why I fell in love with Ahsoka, and this talk between Padme and Ahsoka, just to clarify. She is still a student, she is learning, and she's made mistakes before, and she's going to make more mistakes again. And so Padme tells her it's okay to be insecure, to question herself, and to feel bad sometimes. It's okay to feel bad at moments, and it's okay to be upset and sad. I'm sure that the Jedi is constantly telling Ahsoka to swallow her emotions, just swallow down her feelings and swallow her emotions and keep going, walk it off, put some dirt on it, and whatever. That's not healthy for anyone. It can be very toxic for children to hear stuff like that. It can make them very closed off. It can make them antisocial. It can make them bad. And psychologically, that is not a healthy thing to do for children. Children need to hear more in media that it's okay to express feelings and emotions. It's part of being human. And Padme point blank tells Ahsoka, it's okay to be sad and upset and feel bad sometimes. That's how you grow. That's how you become stronger. And it's moments like these that Anakin and Padme are teaching Ahsoka. And that is, to me, what makes her survive in the long run while other Padawans didn't make it.
Right.
Because that's what made her an individual. But it's just, I mean, there's been a bajillion studies about telling kids to, like, hold off feelings and not express feelings. I mean, the number one killer in men is heart attacks because they don't cry and release stress. Crying is a real stress reliever. So men cry, you'll have a less chance of, you'll relieve more stress and have less heart attacks. I mean, so that's so important in children's television to hear it's okay to emote. Because a lot of times they're told not to emote and to have emotions, and it's, you know, don't cry, stop crying. No, they have feelings, they're expressing feelings, and that's healthy to express feelings. So I'm very happy they included this moment in a children's television show.
Yeah, and that's why I like doing this show with you, is you watch this at a younger age where this stuff, like, had a lot more meaning to you than me as a stoned adult, you know? Sitting watching it on my computer, like, hey, Star Wars, you know what I mean? Not that I wasn't picking up the messages, but they didn't, like, they weren't messages that were, you know, vibing with my particular stage of life when I was watching this, you know?
Yeah.
Ahsoka's age, you know, when this came out.
Yeah, and I think also the difference is in 2017, let's see, how old am I? I had my niece and my nephew. I didn't have nine of them, I only had two. And so they were still pretty little and, like, toddlers and stuff like that, so, like, they didn't really have, like, you know, that much personalities. Well, now that 7 years later, I have nine of them, they all have personalities, they all have feelings, and so, like, it's very interesting watching this now from, because I don't have kids of my own, but these nine kids are my kids. I'm always thinking about them. I'm always reading children's comics, thinking about what they would like. I watch stuff like Steven Universe, like, to be like, this is something that my kids should be watching. So, like, those are my kids. So, like, this is that's a moment I want my nieces and my nephews to watch, to show that it's okay. And I think that's very important television in that moment. Like, while I didn't get that when I was in college in 2010, because my only niece and nephew that were born at the time were toddlers. My mom wasn't even married to my stepdad, so I didn't even have Ava and Kaylee because I got them through the marriage. Now they're my babies, and so because they're my stepsister's kids, and so I didn't even have Kaylee and Ava and Amir and Tyshawn, and then I gained like seven of them, and I love them all.
Jesus.
So, like, yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
It's a lot to keep track of.
I went 2 to 6, and then in the last year, two of my sisters had babies, and my brother found out that he had knocked up a woman, and he had a 9-month-old daughter. So in 1 year, I went from 6 to 9. So this was a very expensive Christmas.
Mullinex family's getting busy out there.
Well, at least my mom's side of
extended,
the family.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then my little sister's about to get married, so she's probably, she already wants to have kids, so that's only going to be going up from there. I'm the sane one, and I just want career and cats. That's what I want from life, is a career and cats. I will never pro-Greek because I have enough nieces and nephews. But yeah, like, this, I'm kind of watching it with new eyes now because now I have, like, these kids I think about, like, how would they react to this kid's television show. So, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I'd be allowed to have kids in my house.
And here is Chris's child on the new episode of Eat It and Beat It. And then Chris got arrested.
he followed me home. It's a baby. He can walk. I don't know. I fed him. He followed me home.
And then my last note. You know, we don't talk a lot of politics in this show. So all I'm going to say, just to present this last note straightforward, Padme declaring on the balcony that she's not going to stop living her life even though there's danger is probably one of the most important messages and needed messages to be said in our current world. There's a lot of crazy stuff going on in the world right now that are pretty bad and pretty crappy. So what Padme is saying is that when we start living in fear, then we lose to that fear. A life of fear is no life at all. And that's probably one of the most important takeaways from this episode.
Amen. That's one of the most important takeaways from life.
Yes.
Personally,
I agree. And so this was just pretty much every Padme Anakin, Padme Ahsoka private scene were just really well done.
It was all
in this act.
I remember I used to work with an autistic dishwasher, and he used to walk home from work every night, you know, which would be like 10:30 at night, 9:30 after dark. And he had to walk under a dark actually a train overpass. And he got robbed at gunpoint. And he was just in utter fear of getting robbed again, you know? And, it was like a young adult male that robbed him. So he was basically afraid at night of anybody that was male that was walking towards him. And I had to explain to him, I said, if you now act in fear that this is going to happen every time you do it, that's going to be there for the rest of your life. Then something else is going to happen and you're going to have that fear. And you're going to have to react as if that could happen at any time. And then something else is going to happen. And then, like, after a few years, you just don't leave your house. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That's how that adds up. So, yeah. Important lessons from Clone Wars.
Yeah. This episode is so current. So, we'll see as we continue. All right, ready?
I'm ready for Act 3.
Act 3. Huh. So, remember, Padme just got shot after our very long conversation. Padme got shot. Act 3. Padme is hurt, but she will live. Ahsoka and Bail beg her to return to Coruscant for her own safety. Padme is like, fuck that. I have a job to do. People aren't going to save themselves without help. And these refugees are important, no matter what other people in high-sitting government positions say. You never need a reason to help people. I kind of paraphrased that myself. I paraphrased that. Since Padme wants to continue, Ahsoka comes up with a plan to protect Padme while she attends the conference. Later that day, Padme enters the summit under a billowing cloak hiding her face. Aura is on the move again, in the vents trying to kill her. Padme takes her place at the front and begins her speech once again. It turns out they hid a droid under Padme's robes. Padme is actually giving her speech through a communicator from her bedroom. Ahsoka senses out the room and realizes that Aura Singh isn't there. Ahsoka takes off and flees back to Padme. Aura takes aim in the air vents above Padme in her bedroom. Ahsoka busts in there and blocks the shot. She force pulls Aura out of the vents, and Aura is like, You almost killed me. Luckily, my boyfriend Hondo pulled me out of the wreckage, but you left me for dead, Jedi. It's on, bitch. And she shoots out the door so Typho and his men can't get in. It's Padme and Ahsoka versus Aura Singh in a very tiny space. Aura spouts off to Padme that this isn't an attempt to help her relief effort or anything for the refugees. Her employer wants revenge on Padme. Simple as that. Aura Singh rapid fires blaster shots at Ahsoka, who does her best to block them. One gets her in the arm. As Ahsoka falls, Padme whips out her own blaster and stuns Aura to the ground. Back on Coruscant, Anakin and Yoda meet with Padme's ship. Anakin is like, holy shit, my wife was shot. And Ahsoka is like, dude, I was shot too. And Anakin is like, no one cares, Snips. And Padme is like, I care, because she was the one who saved me from death, so you should praise her for it. Yoda asks Ahsoka to meditate one more time to figure out who is behind this attack. Ahsoka gives details of something large, something devouring, and purple. And Padme is like, ugh, I know who it is. Anakin and Ahsoka visit Zero the Hutt from the Clone Wars movie in a jail cell, and they very easily get him to admit to hiring Aurra Sing to try and kill Padme, because back in the Clone Wars movie, Padme stopped him and locked him up and stuff like that, and he was still mad. And Zero gives a very loud, curse you meddling kids! And then Anakin and Ahsoka leave. The end.
Well, didn't Zero get out after that and they caught him again? So he's extra...
I think he's about to... Well, that's the thing, the chronological order.
Yeah, because they had that one where Cad Bane... Was it Cad Bane busts him out and he's getting away on the back of his little space sled? Like, ha-ha!
Yeah, and then I think they catch him again because in right. Hunt for Zero, which is later in the season, is when they put him back in jail, which is weird because this comes first.
Right,
let's
right.
see, let me pull up the Clone Wars chronological order. Clone Wars.
Just a flesh wound.
Yeah.
I love that line. That reminds me of playing Army Men when we were kids and someone would get shot. Everybody would be like, I'm not dead. It was just a flesh wound.
No. Okay. So, Hostage Crisis and Hunt for Zero chronologically come after this episode. So, okay. When Cad Bane busts him out, it actually happens after this episode.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, this is a very weird episode because then Hunt for Zero is the episode after Hostage Crisis, but that is later on in this season. That is, man, their timeline this season is so fucked up.
Once again, Space Jail is just a big glass elevator.
Yeah.
Just a big glass room where you have to poop on the floor, apparently. Mm-hmm. I'm really, really obsessed on where you're going to poop if you're in a cell, because that's pretty much all you have to do is poop and sleep.
If you didn't see it last week, we talked about this when we talked about Satine's jail cell on Mandalore. So see last week.
Okay, so this one gets a few points back for tactical stuff because I was already trying to get ahead of it and be smart. And I have the note. Why don't you just holoskype the conference? That would be mm-hmm. a good idea. And as I was writing that, that was when the camera was moving in and you saw that it was a robot. And I was like, mm-hmm. oh, okay, that's the equivalent of holoskyping it. Okay, that's a good decision. So they got a half point back on that one for that setup. Man, they're really working the Ahsoka solo adventures this season.
About time. She wasn't actually... I think that was one of our complaints of the end of season two, that after the Battle of Geonosis, it was very Ahsoka light, so...
This little run here is sort of like what this series would have been like if they really were like focused on Ahsoka, you know, if it was sort of Ahsoka's show, which you know they could have gone that way.
Yeah, but I mean, on one hand, like we're kind of flipping around, like we've been very Obi-Wan light.
Yeah, very Obi-Wan light.
I think he's only been in one episode this season.
I don't think he really did anything either.
It was the one where they were attacking Kamino, so he had a fight with Grievous.
yeah, but he's had a few of those.
Yeah, he wasn't in Clone Cadets. He wasn't in Supply. Oh, I think he was in like a hologram and
right.
a Supply Line or Spirit of Influence. So, yeah, just looking at the list, he has only been in one full episode doing stuff this season.
And man, Zero's an utter moron. For a space criminal, he plays his cards way too easily. He's too easily tricked into admitting. They had no way to really link him to it except for semi-Ahsoka's vision, and he could have easily been just like, I don't know what you're talking about, and it would have been very viable, but he, like, and he does it, and then he goes, oh, no, and, like, you could tell he's realized that he screwed up, and it's just like, I don't know if you'd be that stupid.
Oh, my God. I was looking ahead of, like, when the next Obi-Wan episode was, like, a big Obi-Wan, and it's Hunt for Zero, and I was like, oh, cool, that's the episode with Quinlan Vos. There are literally, like, pages upon pages upon pages of extra information on that episode, so oh. I'm going to have to trim that down when we get there. Jesus Christ.
I don't want to start on that right now.
I know.
But that's really all the notes I had for part three.
Mm-hmm.
Zero's an idiot.
Yeah. For me, this is my big total shell note. I really like Aura Singh's new costume design. I really like the blue navy opposed to her like normal orange. I think it looks really cool on her. So I really like that costume design on Aura. It's a nice little choice there. There's my note about crawling around Vince. Okay, so like I said, we try not to talk politics on the show. So I'm just going to state a couple things from that I noticed about this episode that's kind of going on with current stuff. Regardless of how you view issues, I'm not going to discuss that. I'm not taking biases. I'm just going to compare things that I see now to this episode and how it played out. Cool?
It's cool by me.
Cool. So I started off saying I think Dave Filoni has the ability to see the future. This is a Clone Wars episode about war refugees and how it's important to help them. That is very much a topic about what's going on currently with the Syrian civil war conflict and refugees in this country. And then something I also noticed about Padme's speech is about how if you shoot her down and silence her, then thousands of voices will rise up. I watched this episode the day after Senator Warren was shut out of the Senate, and they silenced her, and then it caused this big backlash on Twitter where people were like, you should let her speak, you should let her talk, you should let her finish. That's kind of what happened here. Padme got shot, and an Aura was trying to silence her, and she still completed her speech. She was still heard. These voices heard her, and it was just interesting that I watched this the day after that happened. And it was kind of cool to see some of the similarities of what was happening in this Clone Wars episode that was made 7 years ago and how it's kind of reflecting things so actually very closely to our current world. And I thought that was very interesting.
Like
me.
I said last time, they're dealing with war and politics. So it's like... like, the difference between what's going on now and just semantic terms and in this episode is more of a example of using force to silence someone, whereas in our current you always use force to silence someone, but it's like the difference between they're using political force, they're using rules and inner things, where this one is more of like you silence someone, but it's the same sort of, but intimidation is intimidation, so it captures the same vibe, and that's just shows the success of the writing of this. They might not have the specific details of, you know, you see, I don't think it's Dave Filoni seeing the future, it's Dave Filoni having a good grasp of the past and what happens in politics and in wartime and how those things intersect. And, you know, I mean, there's a conscious decision in this series not to sort of, like, the politics of sort of this stuff could have been very easily sloughed off as being either boring or non-action oriented or something, but they're going for it. They're actually, you know, I mean, I think it was a couple episodes ago I said I was reading a book on World War II and seeing a lot of the, seeing that George Lucas probably got a lot of his stories from in the prequel, a lot of his ideas in the stories and even some of the names from some of the things that happened in World War II and not necessarily like battles and stuff like you would think, but like political maneuvering and, you know, like Naboo is very similar to the situation that Austria and Czechoslovakia were in before Hitler was actually was sort of invading countries politically, peacefully, you know, peacefully expanding and taking over before they started using military. And I think that shows that they're taking an effort that they don't have to take, that they usually don't take for a kid's cartoon show, of putting some historical perspective and some quote-unquote realism in it to actually make it's genius, because now you can watch Clone Wars and it will, and probably 20 years from now you'll be able to watch Clone Wars and find stuff that shines a little light on or gives a little insight to something that's going on in the real world.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think a lot of different formats use that. Like it, hate it, disagree with it or not. I mean, a lot of people are comparing Harry Potter to what's happening in today's society.
Sure. And when I read Harry Potter, I was like, oh, this reminds me of, you know, history.
Yeah. And so I think I was joking when I said Dave Filoni can see the future, but I mean, like, it's more, like you said, a testament of how well he knows history.
Yes.
And in setting it up to where this could be relatable to a lot of different things. I mean, heck, I remember when Hurricane Katrina happened and a lot of people from New Orleans had to suddenly move to other places. A lot of them moved to Atlanta, and people didn't quite know what to do at the time because we really didn't have, like, places and spaces for them. And we had this one guy join our class for a short amount of time until he could go back home. And he was just like, it was crazy. Like, we kept moving from place to place. Some places didn't want us because they didn't want to put us up and stuff like that. And we didn't really have money. So, I mean, like, you could really apply this to a bunch of different situations, depending. And that's just, making it broad makes it easier to make it, compare it to something specific, you know?
Yes, yes.
Like, this could be any refugees in any situation in any war.
Yeah, it definitely could.
And so I think that's very smart on Dave Filoni's part, and it's what makes, to me, like, this episode so good. My only other note, and this is just a tiny thing, one tiny thing missing from this episode is I wish there was a moment where Anakin gave Ahsoka a good job for figuring out her dreams and saving Padme. He wanted her to study in the place and to, like, work on her abilities, and she did, and it paid off, and Ahsoka saved Padme. And I would have rather had a moment like that where Anakin and Ahsoka were like, we'll go get Zero, and as they're walking away, instead of having that scene with Zero at the end, which totally kind of takes down the episode a lot.
It's weird. It just takes it in a different direction, and then it's over.
Yeah, and so, like, that could have been a really nice moment where Anakin was like, you did really well today. Like, you really trusted your Force abilities. You figured it out. You acted on your own. Like, that could have been a really good moment for Ahsoka and Anakin to have, you know, her space mom and dad. Like, her mom supported her, and the dad approved. Like, that, I feel like that was the one thing missing. And we don't always get those a lot. Like, we don't get a lot of moments where Ahsoka learns the lesson and Anakin doesn't approve. I think the same thing happened in the Jar Camel episode, where, like, we really wish we had a moment where Anakin was like, good job, you did it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's happened a couple of times in this season that I wish they've had Anakin talking Ahsoka through, because that's what made it so good in Geonosis. After the Battle of Geonosis, Dave Filoni made sure that scene of in there where Anakin was talking to Ahsoka and, like, talking to her about it and about what happened with her and Barriss. So I don't understand why we don't have more of those moments, because I feel like those moments are really important for both characters.
They might be just rare for Anakin. He's not the most emotive person, so they're probably something...
That's the thing! He's more emotive than most Jedi.
He's only emotive, yeah, but he's more emotive about his own shit, you know what I mean? He's more emotive about what goes on with him and maybe Padme, but...
See,
like,
I have to disagree, because, like, I think that would actually make his story stronger, because his attachment to Ahsoka is part of what makes him Vader.
But that's still, like, the attachment as an extension of himself, you know? These are the people I love, so I'm attached to them, because it's kind of an ego thing. But, you know, when you sit down with somebody and, like, have those, like, feeling discussion things, that seems like something that, like, Anakin's wouldn't really be into, you know? I mean, if you wound him up into a situation where he's passionate, he would react. But, like, to sit down and be like, okay, I gotta do the right thing right now, here's what I gotta do, it's probably, like, pretty tough for him, you know? And that was, like, he had to do it, so he had to sit down with her, so that's why it was such a big moment, you know? It's probably just not something you get from him every day.
You know, that's a very good point, because if he did that, that would be him taking the spotlight off himself and putting it on somebody else.
Yep.
And I would definitely argue that Anakin is a bit selfish.
A bit, you know?
Yeah, a lot.
I mean, he's selfish sometimes in a good way, but a lot of it's like, you know, still a lot of his motivation for doing good is also like as a reflection of himself, and you know, if you really want to get deep into it. So
yeah, I mean, that's what makes him Vader, is the fact that he was selfish. So that's a very good point. I didn't think about it that way. So, well, that's all I have for Act 3. So what did you think of the episode as a whole?
I liked it. I thought it was very on a par with the last episode as far as entertainment value. I docked it down a half point from the last episode because of all the tactical errors in part two, but then I knocked it back up another half point for actually using the robot Padme. So it's right on par with the last one. I think both of these, I liked them about exactly the same. 7.5.
So did our conversation maybe alter it? Because sometimes I'm changing scores when we have conversations. Talking about the character stuff in the episode change your score a little bit? Maybe like gave it like an extra like half point up or something?
It did. I originally had this at a 7.
Oh, okay, cool. Yay!
I originally had this a little lower than the last episode. So by the end of our talk here, it did go up to a 7.5. Yes, you are correct.
Yay! Dave, I just called you Dave. Dave Filoni! Chris is like, a lot of times in our conversations, like, he'll watch me, like, changing my score as he's reading it.
In front of me as I speak. Yeah. That's okay. Man. That means I can never try to be like, I'm going to try and do the same score as Hope, because I know it's not a written in stone thing if I peek at the notes ahead of an episode.
Yeah.
I usually don't. I usually peek at the notes just to see how long they are, just to get a sense of the shape of the show. I very rarely read them because I don't want to spoil ahead.
Yeah. Well, for me, about my final thoughts on the episode, this is a really great episode for me. I definitely think it definitely hit me differently this time, because there are so many things that are mirrored in today's world in this episode, and I also had like the extra added layer of thinking about my nieces and my nephews, like I said, so that kind of added a lot to it as well. Padme is just so wonderful and brave. She plays both the senator role and like a big sister like role for Ahsoka. Like I said, maternal Anakin role. And I just love seeing Ahsoka continue to struggle with her abilities. It's part of what makes her so relatable to me. That's one of the reasons I fell in love with Ahsoka, is because she failed a lot and she had mistakes. And I was in college and I was failing a lot and having mistakes. And that's part of the reason why I love Ahsoka so much. She's one of the more relatable characters in Star Wars. It's really nice to have Aurra Sing back. Only part that was really down for me a bit in this was Zero at the end. I wish they would have given that time to Anakin and Ahsoka. And so originally I was going to rate this episode an 8. I bumped it up a half point for Dave Filoni's ability to like judge the past and make really good decisions to where you could compare it to the current world. That was quite brilliant for me. So I give it an 8.5 out of 10. So
wow, yeah, full point ahead of me. That's.
I'm definitely more of a character person over a plot person for me. If the plot can suck as long as the character work is great. So I'm like that's why I didn't score the Rio Chuchi episode lower, because the Ahsoka work was really good. So yeah. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback. You can send us feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or at the Two True Freaks Facebook page. We definitely love hearing from you on iTunes. When you rate and review the show, it helps people find the show, so we always like to hear that. And this week, our feedback is from our Facebook page from Patrick, and Chris gave a response, and it's for our episode covering supply lines. Do you want me to read Patrick for you?
Oh, I'll read it. I'll read his wrong opinion.
It's not wrong.
Patrick Delmore said, I gotta agree with Hope here, Chris, so fuck you, Chris. Thanks, Patrick Delmore. This is a good Jar Jar episode. Jar Jar is a lot closer to Grover from Sesame Street in this. I'm not a big fan of Grover, by the way. A lovable loser who makes us laugh. Than he has been previously. Still, I'm happy he and C-3PO were used so sparingly in the series. And I said, I may live to regret my enthusiasm over Bombad Jedi. And yes, I may.
Do you regret it?
Because now I'm the guy who's supposed to love Jar Jar all the time.
You you're not the guy who's supposed to love Jar Jar.
I'm the guy who's supposed to love Jar Jar all the time, Hope.
No, like, I don't love Jar Jar, but I still defended him in that episode. I could do without Jar Jar ever again in my life, but, I mean, it was a good use of Jar Jar, and it was just enough to not be bad.
If you say so.
If he was there about 30 more seconds, it could have been bad. So we're going to stop fighting and...
You know what has as many letters as Jar Jar?
Kit Kat.
Yes. It's Kit Kat time, ladies and gentlemen. And just so in case you don't know, Dario Gonzalez, a listener and friend and confidant of Two True Freaks, has sent me Kit Kats from around the world because I was griping like a little baby on the show about how American Kit Kats were crap. And
how
Canadian
Jar Jar
Kit
is actually
Kats
really
were
good
superior.
In sidelines.
And so now I have Kit Kats from around the world. So I am trying a different Kit Kat from a different place every show. So in a diabetes flaunting evening, we're recording two shows at once, so this is my second Kit Kat. I'll probably only break off one Kit Kat from this one. We are going to Merry Old England.
See, I just get jealous and I eat American candy.
We are going to Merry Old England for Kit Kat Dark. So these are dark chocolate Kit Kats. Now, I've had dark chocolate Kit Kats from other places before, so we'll see if these are the same. Looking at it, it's definitely, the chocolate is definitely darker. It is like a dark mocha as opposed to the sort of more chocolatey brown of a Kit Kat.
Does it taste like Idris Elba?
It tastes like the last dark chocolate one I had. It's bona fide, it's dark chocolate. You can taste, it's like, it's like probably 50-60%, you know.
See, I want to taste Idris Elba, so I'd be down with that.
Oh, it's good. It's very... It tastes very much like the... I can't remember. I think it was a French dark chocolate one. I think it was on the show. Oh, it's like... You know how it... Sorry, I'm actually having blissful dopamine dumps into my brain right now. Chocolate? I used to have this girlfriend, and if you gave her chocolate, she would do the chocolate dance while she ate it.
Mm-hmm.
Which she would sort of hop up and down with her feet and her hands would flap to her sides. I just thought it was her being cute and dramatic. No. As I've gotten older, chocolate has like a drug effect on me. Like dark chocolate, when you get those chocolate bars that are like the 75% dark, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I lay a little bit of that on my tongue, it's just like this feeling, and I do the chocolate dance now, and it's an authentic dance. This has given me the chocolate dance feeling. Like I take bites of it and it's like, ooh, it's like if you drink coffee or tea or something with caffeine when you get your first drink of that in the morning, and your body's just like, ah, hello, thank you, yes, that's that. Good.
I mean French
Kit-Kat
bar.
Kit Kat is controlled substance.
I'm eating a French bar. But I like to let the chocolate melt around it and then crunch the little crunchies as they break off.
Uh-huh.
So, that's what I like to do.
You're saying that as I'm licking the chocolate off my fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Now this episode's sort of bleeding into Eat It and Beat It.
Well, where can people find you, Chris?
Nom, 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 nom. You can find me at TotalFreaks.com. Nom, nom. Where we hold thousands of podcasts in our Uncle Scrooge-like podcast vaults, and then I go swimming in them every night, laughing maniacally as I roll around in all the podcasts made by all the wonderful people of Two True Freaks. And once again, as I said in the last episode, I'm so happy we've got a new Who True Freaks, which is our Doctor Who podcast.
Mm-hmm,
it's
me
been
too.
It's been over a year since the last Who True Freaks. And as any listener of this show knows, you know, it's been on hiatus because one of the main drivers of the show, Sean Engel, died. And it's been just sort of in hiatus until people have had the heart to do it. And David Walker had the heart to do it. And it's great. I'm hoping for many, many more shows in the future because we need more shows because we need you to be on some of them. Can't wait to have you and Shag back together again.
I wouldn't mind doing, because I just don't think the Ninth Doctor gets a lot of love. I like to do some more, like, Ninth Doctor stuff. Even though, like, outside of the episode we cover, the Ninth Doctor season is pretty rough. I will admit it. Like, we did one for the two-parter introducing Jack with the gas mask child. Doctor Dances and, oh, what's the other name? The empty child and the Doctor Dances we did. I also would like to do some Tenet episodes and some stuff with the Pawns.
Well, you know, you're one of the major mover and shakers of that show, so anything you want to do, all you have to do is grab a few people and...
Well, one of the things is we kind of agreed that whoever pulls it together has to edit it, and I don't have time to edit. That was one of the things we agreed. So
well, here, how about this? How about this, Hope? If you pull one together, I'll edit it for you. How about that?
Oh.
How about that? And I'm saying it on the air, so it's official.
Oh, now you're putting me in the position now. And not like an eat it or beat it or Dirty Yoda position.
That's my job. That's my job as co-founder of Two True Freaks, to put people in those positions.
I would have to think about it, because I definitely want to do it, and I really need something to get me back into Doctor Who. I haven't had that kind of drive, and there's a lot of things I could do, because I have a deep love of the Pawns. I actually, Sean and I always wanted to do an episode debating Rose, because I loved Rose. Pretty much every other person on Who True Freaks hates Rose. And so Sean wanted me to have an episode where I debated Rose with somebody. So I might look into that. I gotta think about that. I haven't watched any Rose's seasons in like forever.
Well,
so I'd have to
listening who wants to debate Rose with Hope. Now you know. And you can go to our Facebook page, our Two True Freaks Facebook page, and say, "Hey Hope, I wanna debate Rose with you." How do you like that segue?
Have to think about it. Okay.
So Hope, where can they find you?
I don't like this kind of pressure. You can find me at JGuysAndJedi. I run our Twitter, which is at JGuysAndJedi. I didn't put that in the right order of words. You can also find me at Twitter at Hope Mullinex, and I'm also the newsbeat writer for WhatTheFangirl.com. I'm gonna drink an entire beer during this, and yeah, I have alcohol on me now.
Woo, I do too. I drank a glass of wine while we were talking, but I never seem to feel my glass of wine because I usually have a full stomach when I drink it, so.
You know, I think this was a good episode because, like, we weren't our normal funny classy, but we talked about good shit.
There's some content. We gave some, this was the vegetables episode. They'll get some candy and dessert on either side of this, but today you ate your vegetables.
You got your Star Wars vitamins and your minerals and your fiber, so you're going to poop good Star Wars in the morning.
A nice solid Star Wars poop.
Bye, guys. See you next week.
Yeah, we can't go on.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. TrueFreaks.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. Dumbass. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of Two True Freaks.
I got it in the tip of my tongue.
Come on.
Oh, golly, I'm nervous. Let me see. Oh, Alexander Dumbass. Oh, Henry Dumbass.
Asura spouts out of how Padme, how, blah, 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 I lost my spot.